Claire.
Marijuana legalization also ushers in the return of the American hemp industry. Get the latest news from the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, Doug Fine, in our Hemp Day Hump Day update.
Welcome back, everybody, and Happy New Year. A Happy New Year to you, Doug Fine, calling us from wherever you're at. Welcome back, Doug.
It's always good to be with you, Russ, here on Hemp Day Hump Day. Thanks for having me, and I'm on the Funky View Ranch in New Mexico right now, working on hemp legalization here in my home state. Could be planting on the ranch with my kids this spring.
Oh, that's awesome. Glad to hear that. Of course, the hemp, the goat farm down there in New Mexico. How's the weather down there? You're freezing out yet?
Yeah, it's been pretty, El Nino in the high desert is a nice thing. It's wetter than usual. We did some sledding in the mountains. And when I say planting with my kids, I'm talking about human and goat kids, because the whole family needs that superfood of the hemp seed oil.
Yeah, we're looking forward to, you know, legalizing that throughout the country and getting that production up and running. It'd be great health benefits for Americans. Now, Doug, it's been a while since we've had a chance to talk. I know a ton of things have been going on nationally and internationally when it comes to industrial hemp. Give us an update. Where do we stand here in 2016?
Well, I'll have to throw a dart at the dartboard to say where to start. I guess I'll start with the biggest thing left to do when it comes to what these days is called industrial hemp, is the passage of S-359, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. There's a lot of co-sponsors, but there's a huge effort on, including one that I'm going to be participating in, to make sure that gets onto the floor and passed. Once onto the floor and voted on, there's very, very little opposition, but there's a lot going on in the world. And the legislators, Congress folk, and senators who support it need to, prioritize it high enough so that it gets on the docket. And there's a major push this year from so many places to get it going. But the 2015 harvest, which I've been documenting, it was a remarkable thing. It's the exponential growth. I predicted a couple of years ago when I wrote in Hemp Bound, but this is not, crystal ball genius on my part. It's farmers understanding what the value of the crop is immediately. Farmers are businessmen and women first and foremost, and it's going to be win-win for the whole society.
Let's remind people, what is that bill again, and how can people help get that passed?
S-359, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, it has a different number on the House side, but if folks Google Industrial Hemp Farming Act, they'll see information about it. And calling and writing to your congresspeople and senators, first do the research to see if they are already one of the co-sponsors, which is great, but then urge them to make sure they take it to the floor and mention that they're voting on it. And if their reps are not already up to really make noise about it, tell their friends. It's really big. The one of the many biggest things that's emerged as a hemp app in the past year or so has been hemp as the best performing fiber for next generation nanotechnology involved in supercapacitors, that is energy storage in the future. And we've talked about it here on Hemp to Hemp Day in the past, but it's real. I've been interviewing the researchers that have been involved in the project, and it's the best case wishes for what hemp can do when it comes to food, when it comes to energy. It's better than we could have guessed during Prohibition, before we were allowed to be doing research.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, for years, going all the way back to Jack Herer, people have talked about, hemp for fuel, hemp for fuel. And we always looked at it as the hemp seed oil that could be used as a biodiesel kind of product. But now this idea of hemp fibers in graphene batteries takes us away from combustion and gets us more into wind and solar and all these renewable sources, where their only problem has been, where do you store the excess power? Because a power grid has to have a constant kind of flow, and these if I'm understanding correctly, the hemp would perform not only as well as graphene, but be so much cheaper that it would finally unlock the cost savings potential of these alternative energy sources, right?
That's right. It's quite possible that while we are still dealing with combustion engines, as we ideally fade those out, that when enough acreage is grown, which might be sooner rather than later, based on, I can talk to you about acreage and the exponential growth that's been happening just in the first and second federally legal harvest of the modern era, that we may see enough acreage growing that the hemp seed oil can be used for biodiesel type applications. And I've driven on hemp seed oil, but you're absolutely right that first and foremost, hemp produces so much biomass, and that's just there. And that can be used for energy production. In fact, in Europe, is being used for energy production in relatively clean anaerobic combustion applications like gasification. But this, like you said, energy storage side could be the real game changer, because you got the parabolic solar collector there in the Nevada desert, and now you have a eco-friendly and high-performance way of storing that energy. It also, it's not even just about having cheap biomass to store the energy. It performs so well that it's decreasing the amount of time that it takes, for instance, let's say, to charge an entire car battery. So I've been trying to ping Elon Musk on Twitter to make him aware of these interviews I've been doing with the progenitors of these hemp studies.
And Musk, of course, the guy who's behind the Tesla batteries, right?
That's right.
Excellent. It would be such a natural fit. I'm glad you're pressuring him on that. So folks, yeah, get involved and you know, look up this Industrial Hemp Farming Act bill. And this is one of those things where a call to action goes out equally to everyone, because this is as bipartisan an issue as you can get. I mean, you've got Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul of Kentucky, two diehard Republicans who are two of the strongest supporters of this thing.
That's right. And also progressives in Jared Polis in Colorado, Earl Blumenauer in Oregon. There's folks in Tennessee pushing hard as well. So it's really it's a completely bipartisan issue. There's no opposition. There's hardly any opposition to any cannabis anymore.
Yeah.
But especially on hemp, if it just gets to the floor, it's going to happen. Meanwhile, even while we are in this, what's called the research provision, many listeners will already know about this, but to a degree, federal prohibition ended first with hemp a year or two ago, as the research provision in the Farm Bill was passed, allowing de facto legalization, because sales and marketing research are allowed, which has allowed Kentucky to go from a dozen acres in 2014 to 1,700 acres.
Wow.
This year. Colorado is seeing similar growth. I was at 140-acre harvest, Colorado 70-acre harvest in Kentucky, and I'm really learning how to do it, which is really a ton of fun. And then just a few weeks ago, the president signed a bill that included a provision to allow interstate commerce with regard to hemp, which was one of these factors that was hampering even the research phase. I can tell you from being involved in trying to help hemp projects in the friendliest of states, like Kentucky, get their hemp seed imported. It's not like it was that hard, but it was tricky. Anytime you're importing anything, it's tricky. And the fact that now that the seeds are being regenerated in the states, and that those seeds can be moved across states, on how I think a lot of people are interpreting this new provision that got signed into law, is going to make things a lot easier. But we really need that S-359. The second, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act on the federal level, that's the first thing listeners can really do. As far as individual states go, I mentioned Kentucky and Colorado. They both are increasing exponentially. You look for thousands of acres to be cultivated in both Colorado and Kentucky next year. But I'm also helping out involved in states that have so many interested farmers, but they're in what this I call this sort of middling, this second tier level of support from their state agriculture department. The research provision, again, all this is surmounted when we pass full federal legalization, and that's one floor vote away in the House and Senate. But in individual states that have their own hemp laws and could be surging forward, the farmers want to do it. The law's passed. It requires cooperation from the state agriculture department and from universities. And I'm helping farmers in multiple states like that, including Vermont and Oregon. And those are some of the stories that have me the most excited because it's a kind of a can-do, don't take no for an answer attitude. And the fact that Vermont and Oregon's acreage looks to increase exponentially next year from admirable small starts this year is something that's really, really cool to me. That was vital that that seed got in the ground in those two states and other similar states, and it's going to be even bigger next year.
Oh, we're so looking forward to it. I know a few of the Oregon hemp farmers out here are looking forward to expanding the program, and the rest of the states that are working on this. It's just, it's amazing how fast the ball is rolling now. Looking at the international side of things, I know there's a UN General Assembly coming up in April to talk about, you know, psychoactive marijuana, and generally, the rest of the world has been far ahead of us on industrial hemp. Is there anything at the international level we need to be paying attention to?
Well, the UNGAS, as they call it, the United Nations General Assembly special session, is worth watching. I testified at some of the hearings leading up to UNGAS that were held in Vienna last year, and you could see, especially amongst people that have been working on this issue, and this is actually an all drugs kind of thing. It's not just cannabis. You can see that the UN bureaucracy is inching toward, it's actually in some cases leaping towards, but inching towards acknowledgement of reality. There's been head in the ground kind of nonsense. You know, it was late 90s that the UN's drug slogan is a drug-free world, we can do it. And now it's they've adopted that kind of harm reduction side of things, but there's even more recently, there's been leaked documents from the UN drug policy folks, the High Commission, as they call it, that says, you know, we got to just get with the program and let member states do their thing. Whether or not it will happen at the special session in April in New York, I mean, I'm going to be there, but I don't know. I tend to be an optimist, and optimism tends to be right, but I'm not an international law expert, and you know what some people, what some analysts are saying, not that analysts are always right, is that this is just going to be opening the debate that will eventually acknowledge what the three international conventions on narcotic drugs have to say, which is it's none of the international community's business what a member state does about drugs. And yeah, sure, we can have political involved to protect movement of any kind of materials from one member state that doesn't share similar laws with another member state, right? One state legalized, one U.S., Uruguay, Portugal legalized cannabis. Maybe, you know, Saudi Arabia has a right to not have it exported to them under international law if they don't want it. Well, okay. Which we all hope they would, because Saudi people have endocannabinoid systems too, but...
good point.
Anyway, so you get the point. So I'm not sure how big UNGAS is, but it's remarkable that it was called, the special session was called by the presidents of Colombia, Venezuela, and Mexico, saying we have to address these out-of-date drug laws.
Oh, Doug Fine, you've got so much information for us. We need two segments, but we've run out of time in this one. Follow Doug on @OrganicCowboy on Twitter. You can go to DougFine.com for more information on his books and his whereabouts. If Doug's speaking somewhere near you, you want to see him. So check out that schedule and get out there and get active. Doug, thanks so much for calling in, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Learn more about industrial hemp.
Can't wait. Thanks, Russ.
Thank you, man. All right, folks. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. We're going to take a look at third parties in America. Gary Johnson's running for president again, and unfortunately, there's no shot in hell he'll be elected. I'll tell you why when we come back.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.